Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 8 of the Real Deadwood Podcast. This is Paul Dennis speaking to you from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And I think I've got a pretty darn good lineup for you today. We're going to start out today with a continuation of what we had last time, which was a comedy routine being performed by Mr. Jim Beaver, who plays Ellsworth on the HBO Deadwood show. And this was done while the HBO cast, 11 of them, were here visiting Deadwood over last summer. And I think you're going to be pretty entertained by Jim Beaver. He's got, if you listened to part one last time, you know that he's a very funny guy, and we will continue this time with part two. By the way, speaking of listening to part one last time, if this is your first time listening to the Real Deadwood Podcast, I would urge you to definitely go back and listen to the earlier episodes. I heard during the week an interesting kind of a theory, and that is that sometimes when people find out about a podcast and they see that there are a bunch of episodes already, and they, you know, they want to listen to the latest one, and they figure, well, why should I listen to the old ones? Because you know, that's old news, or those have expired, or they're not current. Well, I have tried very, very hard with the Real Deadwood Podcast to make each show time independent, you might say. I try not to talk about current events too much, although from time to time when we have our Deadwood news, we talk about, Deadwood was just renewed for the fourth season or whatever. Well, that doesn't really matter when that happened or what, you know, day of the month that is. So, any of the episodes, the earlier episodes, right from episode one up to whatever episode we're at, which again today is number 8, you can listen to those anytime. So let's get on with the show then. As I mentioned, we'll be listening to part two of the comedy routine from Jim Beaver. Then we will have a conversation with historical archaeologist Jerry Bryant, the research curator at Deadwood's Adams Museum and House, and we'll be discussing one of the new characters that David Milch has in store for us in June when season 3 starts, and his name is Jack Langrish. After that is part one of an interview with Steve Earle. He is a country rock, or you might call progressive country artist, who is also an author of best-selling works of fiction, and he's a playwright, and he's also a very well-known political activist for a number of very good causes. He's a good friend of Earl Brown, who plays Dan Doherty on the HBO show, and he was a performer at the Deadwood Jam, and I got a chance to sit down and talk to him. Following that, we'll have our usual Mount Moriah Cemetery Sound Sing Tour with my son Alex, who was a tour guide there over the summer. And then we're going to have something a little bit different this time, which is going to be music from a local Black Hills artist, and his name is Hank Harris. And we'll be talking about the new CD that he'll be coming out with pretty soon that was actually commissioned by the Adams Museum and House. Then we're going to have part two of my interview with Deadwood Chamber Events Coordinator Joe Hamm, discussing how they get the talent lineups for the many, many events that we have here in Deadwood every year. Following that, we'll have some listener feedback. I'll have some read you some emails that I've gotten from all around the world. And then we'll wind up with some HBO Deadwood news. So let's get started with Mr. Jim Beaver, who plays Ellsworth on the show, and part two of his comedy routine.
There was one girl there, though, that I loved harder than a goat through the butt of stump. Jessie Sue Kirsten Corn. Yeah, Jessie Sue Kirsten Corn. Was she? She had a lower lip that pooched way out. I didn't mind that so much because her upper lip covered it. She had a long jaw. Fact is, her whole face was long in that way. Her face was so long she could eat oats out of a churn. She was tall enough to hunt geese with a rake. And she was a mite bow-legged. woman said she was so bow-legged she had to get up out of bed at night to turn over. Being tall that way and bow-legged, you see her coming toward you, it looked like an egg beater walking down the road. But that didn't come to a good end. I had to go away. I had to go away on business to downstate prison for a while. And I wrote Jesse Sue Gersten Korn special delivery letters every day and sometimes twice a day for 4 months. She had the gall to tell me she was marrying the mailman. Give it a second. So I told her, Jesse Sue, you don't have to hit me over the head with a knapsack full of pickles. I get a hint. And I broke up with her. And then I come out to L.A. to be a TV actor. I had one vast advantage. I knew how to do nothing else. And I had a brilliant career, which after 30 years catapulted me to the rank of total unknown. And then I landed a job on this Deadwood thing. I think I've found my catchphrase. And that landed me here in beautiful downtown South Dakota. I was wandering around town last night. I wandered into one of these casinos. They really do compare well to Las Vegas in style and size and lighting. I don't know too much about gambling other than getting up here tonight. That was a fair thing. I was watching some of the people, and I don't really gamble. I just went in to watch, and there's some strange-looking people hanging out next to me. There's a lot of young ladies don't wear all that many clothes. I noticed around here. Some of them wear these little cotton shorts, you know. I seen more cotton in an aspirin bottle. You know, a lot of girls run around with their tummies showing up. A couple of times I saw that, I thought I was looking at a flesh-colored belt with a picture of a belly button on the pocket. I saw this one girl in a real low-cut kind of thing walking over by one of the tables. It was hard to tell whether she was inside that thing trying to get out or outside trying to get out. She was over at one of them tables where they was throwing them dice cubicles around. After a while, I heard this fella yell, "They're coming out." And I said, "I ain't a bit surprised." A lot of women walking around wearing these slacks, and some of these women shouldn't call out. So on some of them, the only place they slack is around the ankles. I saw this one big old hefty, good. Well, you'd have to say she was fat. She looked like a bale of hay with the middle wire busted. I saw her standing over working two slot machines at the same time. She was pumping coins into that machine, pulling them levers, pumping coins, pulling them levers, pumping coins, pulling levers from the back. It looked like two pigs fighting in a gunny sack. I figured that the only way for a non-gambler like me and maybe some of you folks to walk out of here with any money, because rumor has it the odds are stacked somewhat against the customer. Unless you're Peter and Jason. Yeah, well, 200 clams in 5 minutes can play havoc with a comic's timing. What you do is you wander over one of the tables, all stacked up real high with chips and stuff, and you just throw yourself a conniption cat fit and holler and thrash around and throw yourself up on the table and swallow just as many chips as you can hold. Anyway, before I return you to the talent portion of the show, I just want to raise a toast to, this is for the men in the audience here.
Fuck you!
Thank you very much. All of you gentlemen out there, I'd like to raise a toast to our wives and sweethearts. Love them, romance them, and pray to God they don't ever run into each other.
That was funny. Now, there is a video clip of this entire comedy routine by Jim Beaver from start to finish on the Real Deadwood podcast website. Go there and check the video clips button and click the link and you'll be able to see this entire routine. Next, we're going to talk to historical archaeologist Jerry Bryant, as we have many times here in the past. He's the research curator at Deadwood's Adams Museum and House. His job is to provide research to HBO, David Milch, also to the art department, the costuming people, the makeup people, and just about everyone who is putting together the great Deadwood show that we love so much. We're going to talk this time about a character that David Milch will be introducing that is based on a real person who did come to Deadwood. His name is Jack Langrish. We're calling him Langrish from time to time. I suppose you can pronounce it either way. And he was a theater producer who came to Deadwood and put on plays, and you'll hear Jerry talk about where he came from and pretty much how his operation worked. In the show, David is going to portray him as a gay character, and so we're going to discuss that aspect of Jack Langrish. So here we go with Jerry Bryant.
I was called today and asked about backdrops for Langrish.
Mm-hmm. Jack?
Jack Langrish, and they want to know.
Well, it's public knowledge that he's going to be a new character.
Yeah, and he's going to be.
But David's going to make. Oh, well, yeah, there's a whole story that David's going to make him gay.
Yeah, a little light in the sneakers.
Uh-huh.
But they wanted to know some of his hobbies. And so that's what I'm researching.
So for
right
the record,
now.
Though, he was not gay, right? Or at least he wasn't reported to have been gay or acted that way or whatever.
Paul.
This is just a David Milch invention to add some interest to the show.
Paul, we're looking at the 19th century.
Right.
And I don't think it would have been advisable for a guy
to have advertised that.
To have been too effeminate
right.
on the main street of Deadwood.
Right.
I mean, that would have been a death sentence, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't tolerant of a lot of things.
Right.
And that was one of them.
Well, but people in the theater, there may have been a certain amount of leeway given to someone who was artistic or someone who was a theater person, and if they acted a little bit different from off the beaten path, they might have said, "Oh, well, that's just the theater person."
Yeah, but how do you know that in common, you know, in everyday interaction on the main street?
Yeah.
How do you know that this guy's from the theater? I mean, does he look funny? Does he what? I mean,
well, when the new guy comes into town and they see a guy, I mean, they're going to say, "Who's that? Oh, that's the theater guy." I mean, wouldn't that?
Well,
I mean, that would kind of spread eventually. Of course, with 10,000 people in town, not everybody is going to say, "Who's that?"
Yeah.
Right? There's going to be a certain amount of anonymity.
Yeah. Now,
it's not like it is now with only 1,300 people, and somebody comes into town, and you're like, "Who's that?"
Yeah. 10 times what we have today.
Right.
But a lot of the folks that came out of Colorado would have known Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of the German people that came into the hills from
came from Colorado?
Yeah, he was down in the... Jeez.
And he was putting on theater and stuff down there?
Oh, yeah.
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 Well, what drew him to Deadwood? Just a
same
new challenge?
That drew the rest of them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's miners to be mined.
Right.
I mean, and he was truly... A lot of people don't recognize the fact that he was truly a frontier theater man.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want anything to do with the big...
New York or San Francisco.
No, he didn't want anything to do with the cities.
He wanted to bring culture to the uncultured.
He wanted to show the kids out on the frontier how the hell it was done.
See, he was like a preacher in a way. He had his
agenda,
right?
Yeah.
He had his passion and his,
you bet.
Yeah.
And Jack was good. Uh-huh. We're talking Pioneer Theater, and Jack was basically the epitome of Pioneer Theater.
Huh.
Whether he was gay or not, who the fuck will ever know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care.
And so as far as the research and the local newspapers and stuff, is he pretty well documented and his arrival in town and his...
Well, I got several primary documents.
Did he have a primary venue, or did he kind of take his show around to different buildings and different venues in town?
Well, actually, what most people in the movie or in the series won't recognize or see is that the Bella Union didn't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
It bit the dust pretty early. And in real life, Jack Langrish rented the Bella Union.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where his theater was.
That was his venue. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And after it had folded as a bar and brothel.
Yeah, yeah.
He just used it as...
Yeah, and it was a beautiful building.
So it's not documented that he was gay, necessarily. That's obviously as much of a creation by David Milch as the fact that Preacher Smith had a brain tumor or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Right. But, you know, I'm not a person to say that he wasn't.
Right. It's just that it wasn't documented. Yeah.
I mean, it
David
wasn't documented.
David can speculate all day long.
I've sent HBO at least two primary documents. One of them was a thesis on Jack Langrish in the Frontier Theater.
Written by...
Most of them were done down here in Denver by people going to school. And,
So like their graduate work or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was all graduate level
work.
It was
their project, yeah.
It was all master's and PhD level work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I work on up here is our Deadwood newspapers.
Right.
But you can't just stop there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to explore what everybody else has had to say, too.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I find a name that I want to research, I want to go and say, well, where the hell did they come from?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I find Jack Langrish was in every frontier mining town.
Wow.
I mean, he was all over the fucking planet doing theater.
And there's some interesting information about a new character that we'll be seeing in the third season of HBO's Deadwood. And as usual now, I'm going to have a medley that I put together. These are the first two big songs that made it on a national basis for my musical guest. So listen to this music and see if you recall it.
Just out off from about San Antonio with a radio blasting and the bird dog on. There's a speed trap up ahead of Salma Town, but no local yokel gonna shut me down. Cause me and my boys got this rig unwound and we'll come 1,000 miles from a guitar jam. With a weekly load, you can smell a whiskey burning down Copperhead Road.
And there we have Guitar Town and Copperhead Road, done by none other than Steve Earle. Now, in case you don't know who Steve Earle is, he started out actually as a songwriter in Nashville, and he lived there for several years. I'm going to read you a little bit of his bio. Now, this is kind of a compilation of a couple of bios that are out there online for you. I have about 5 or 6 links for various websites about Steve Earle on the show notes for Episode 8 at RealDeadwoodPodcast.com. So you can read all about him and find out a whole lot more information, but I'm just going to give you the highlights here. He lived in Nashville for several years, making connections within the industry and eventually landing a job as a staff writer for the publisher Sunbury Dunbar. Patti Loveless and Johnny Lee recorded his songs, and Elvis Presley was scheduled to cut one of Steve's songs, but Elvis never showed up at the session. Too bad. In 1986, Steve Earle's debut album, Guitar Town, was released. Upon its appearance, Earle was grouped into the new traditionalist movement begun by Dwight Yoakam and Randy Travis, but he also gained the attention of rock critics and fans who saw similarities between Earle's populist sentiments and the heartland rock of Bruce Springsteen and John Mellencamp. Guitar Town became a hit, with its title track becoming a top 10 single in the summer of 1986. With his third album, 1988's Copperhead Road, Earl's rock and roll flirtations came to the forefront, and country radio responded in kind. None of the songs from the album charted or received much airplay. However, album rock radio embraced him, sending the album's title track into the album rock top 10, which helped make the album his highest charting effort. In 1991, MCA decided not to renew Earl's record contract. For the next several years, Earl was severely addicted to cocaine and heroin and had several run-ins with the law. In 1994, he was arrested in Nashville for possession of heroin and sentenced to a year in jail. He served in a rehab center instead of jail. This time, the treatment worked. Late in 1994, he was released from the rehab center and he began working again. Now we skip ahead a little bit. While Earl had long displayed a strong political streak, particularly in his opposition to the death penalty, his views took center stage on his 2002 album, Jerusalem. Written and recorded in the wake of the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, Jerusalem dealt openly with Earl's divided feelings about America's war on terror and the West's ignorance of the Islamic faith, and included a song about John Walker Lind, a young American who was discovered to be fighting with Taliban forces, called John Walker's Blues. Earl's refusal to condemn Lind and his lyrics quickly made the song and the album a political hot potato. But Earl embraced the controversy and became a frequent guest on news and editorial broadcasts, defending his work and clarifying his views on terrorism, patriotism, and the role of popular artists in a time of crisis. Now, you're going to hear my interview with him. The first part of it apparently got cut off somehow or erased. And what happened was, as we started the interview, I had found a website that was saying some critical things about Steve Earle. And I sort of told him, you know, what the website had said and asked him, so what do you think about that? And then he was answering, you know, what he thought about that. And then all of a sudden, you'll hear the interview, you know, kick in. So that's kind of what you missed was, you know, my asking him this question. And we'll take it from there. This will be part one of my interview with Steve Earle. And next time, we'll have part two. So here we go. My interview with Steve Earle. This was just after he had gotten off the stage at the Deadwood Jam in September.
You know, it's... I'm not real big on trivia. Like, I'm a huge baseball fan, but I can't quote statistics. You know, I remember years in certain teams that I've been a Yankees fan all my life, and I remember certain teams that I just remember mainly because it was a certain point in my life. You know, and I kind of remember music the same way. So I mean, there's some stuff. I probably know too much about the Beatles, and I know too much. I know a lot about J.R.R. Tolkien. I mean, I don't speak Elvish, but I'm really close because I literally grew up with that stuff and couldn't wait for the movies to come out. And I probably read all those books, you know.
My thing was studying maps
times.
Because it made it so real. It's like
I'm a map freak.
Maybe is this like, this can't be real, but look at this map and everything.
He created a world, and it's like, that's the maps intrigued me about it too, but I love maps. But, you know, it's one of those things that you know, it gives that guy something to talk about if he gets interviewed, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I knew that you'd be doing the show, and I knew that, I mean, the jam show, and I was hoping I'd maybe be able to get to interview you. And I just heard this last week, and I thought, that's the reputation of Steve Earle. That's not our reputation, is that you're a hero of your politics make you a hero with us, with my wife and me. The fact that you're willing to stand up and you know, speak out and call an unfair thing an unfair thing.
I don't think
call
I
bullshit
sound,
bullshit.
Anybody
you know?
Can't tell me from Kenny Chesney is like not listening very
I
close.
Know, exactly. Yeah. You know, that's just crazy. Well, now I had mentioned to you earlier, first of all, this podcast is sort of, it's not based on it, but have you ever seen the Deadwood TV show on HBO?
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm a really good friend of mine's on Deadwood, so I've kind of been around.
And that's Earl Brown?
Yeah, W. Earl Brown. Who I have a play that's actually opening in New York October 20th called Carla, which is about Carla Faye Tucker, who was the first woman executed in Texas since the Civil War. It was originally produced in Nashville 3 years ago, and Earl played Danny, who is Carla's charge partner and boyfriend. And actually, we had to cancel one performance because he got the Deadwood gig, and he had to be there on that day to shoot the pilot and shoot the first episode.
Well, he has been to Deadwood a number of times, and we've corresponded with Carrie, and he's eaten at our house a couple times, and so we've sort of become friends with him. And I actually played the guitar that you gave him.
Yeah.
He came down and played and jammed in my basement the first time they were here.
It was when we were doing Carla that I gave him that guitar.
That's and you know, when you read all the actors' bios now from Deadwood, since they're all big stars and everything now, from what I gather from his bio was that he had listened to country music and liked it okay, and then he listened to rock and he liked it okay.
Yeah, he's a member of the Kiss Army.
Well, it wasn't until he heard your music that he realized you confused the two together.
We met in the luggage area at LAX. We flew on the same plane from Nashville to LA because Earl's from Kentucky, so when he flies home, he flies to Nashville and then rents a car and drives up. And he and Carrie were flying back, and it was after the Bluegrass record came out, after The Mountain came out, and there's a song on that record called Carrie Brown, and which I wrote before I knew, you know.
Is that right?
Carrie, yeah.
Wow.
And he walked up and introduced himself, and he said, and this is Carrie Brown. And so that got the conversation started.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. Well, yeah, his success, I mean, it's a long way from There's Something About Mary, no doubt about that, playing the...
Well, something, you know, the funny thing about it is I'm not a Farrelly Brothers fan. I think their movies are kind of mean sometimes, you know, but that performance in Something About Mary was
brilliant.
Astounding, and,
yeah.
And it didn't do for him what it should have done.
Yeah.
And a lot of the reason it didn't do what it should have done, I think, is the Farrelly Brothers. I think they were kissing the people that they paid the most money to, his asses, and it didn't do what it should have. And so Deadwood was a really cool thing for him because he's a really fine actor, and he's a great guy.
Well, for our listeners who aren't aware, that the guy who plays Dan Doherty, Earl Brown, in the Deadwood TV show played the retarded brother of Mary, Warren, in There's Something About Mary.
Yeah.
And
he also played Meatloaf in a VH1 movie.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's done some amazing things.
Yeah.
And there we have a nice talk with Steve Earle. And next time will be part two, so make sure you listen to episode 9 of The Real Deadwood Podcast.
This is The Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Next up is Alex, my 16-year-old son, who was a tour guide up at Mount Moriah Cemetery over the summer, the current home of Wild Bill Hickok and Calamity Jane. Now, if you've been listening to our podcasts up till now, the 7 podcasts before this one, we've sort of been working our way up to the graves of Wild Bill, Calamity Jane, and another prominent Deadwood icon, you might say, named Potato Creek Johnny, who's not quite as famous as the other two, but you'll certainly hear all about him as well as the other two. And so my son calls them the Big Three, actually, and their graves are all very close together. So I think we're probably going to get there next time. I think we're going to probably get there at episode 9. We'll probably spend episode 9 and 10 talking about, maybe even 11, talking about the Big Three. So here we go with Alex and this episode's segment of the Soundseeing Tour of Mount Moriah Cemetery.
Now, right next to W.E. Adams' grave, just down the way there, is the name Gray on an incredibly large, large stone. And this is, yes, another John Gray. And judging from his plot, he was probably what?
Rich.
Right. He was quite rich. He actually owned a mine here in town. You know, if you're going to be rich, that's probably the way to do it. He owned the Wasp No. 2 mine here in Deadwood. And with it, he basically used it as a mine guinea pig. He wanted to try out a new type of mining called leaching, which involves a lot of cyanide and a lot of heavy moving and stuff like that. And really no one knew if it was going to work or not. And they pretty much all laughed at him because he purchased this mine for $15,000, which was a pretty hefty sum back then. But it was he who had the last laugh. His mine, in the 19 years that it was open, pulled out a profit of $350,000, which the equivalent of, in today's terms, is approximately $2.5 million. So if that puts it on a grander scale there. Also, you can see typical male, white male from back in the time. On the front of his wife's grave, it says wife of John Gray. It does not say her name. Only on the top does it say Ellen. Now, if you see in the back on the light colored granite stone by the tree back there, the name Dietkin, do you see that? That is the family plot of Julius Dietkin, who was the first pharmacist here in town. And I guess the reason I point him out is because he had a pharmacy. I point him out because, like I said, he was the first pharmacist here in town, and he owned a pharmacy on Main Street, Deadwood, which was open for about 4 years, but then burnt down. And then he, I guess, got some investors, rebuilt with his brother, this time out of brick, a little one-room place. He prospered for quite a while, 40 years before he died, but then due to the Syndicate Block fire in 1989, that too burnt down, so I guess Deadwood was just not keen on having a Dietkin pharmacy here, but now the Holiday Inn Express resides right where his pharmacy was, so it went from pharmacy to multi-million dollar hotel. So we're walking up the stairs now almost to the big three, as I like to call them. And in case you're wondering who the big three are, I'm talking about Wild Bill, Calamity Jane, and Potato Creek Johnny. But before we get there, I want to make just one more stop. You can see the name in this concrete wall here, the name Dufresne. This is the grave of Dora Dufresne and her husband Joseph. And I guess what kind of makes her popular was that she was the most prosperous madam here in town. You see, if you look at the pictures on the website, the four urns around her grave, they are set there to represent her four brothels that she owned. She owned one in Lead, one in Deadwood, one in Rapid City, and one in Belle Fouche. She was actually kind of a generous lady, which was odd for women in her line of work at the time, I guess you could say.
I thought all the prostitutes were generous back then.
What? Okay. For money.
Yeah.
But just listen, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so she was a generous lady in that she would have her recruiters go out across the United States and recruit more workers, as we'll call them, for those of you who have young ones listening. So she would have her recruiters go out and recruit more workers, and her workers would come into town with the idea that they were going to be singing and dancing and doing that type of thing in saloons and stuff. But when they got to Dora's place, they realized, oh crap, that's probably not what we're going to be doing. Maybe a little bit less singing, more dancing, as it were. But she, or if the girls decided that they didn't want to do that type of thing, she would send them back home with food and a little bit of money. She would give them new clothes and everything, so she would not keep them here against her will, which I guess some of you might consider stupid.
Against their will.
Right. If they decided they didn't want to
Yeah, you
stay.
Said against her will.
Oh, against their will.
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I meant. Okay, also, she was kind of odd in that she was always seen on Deadwood's Main Street with a pet parrot on her shoulder. And when she died, when she died, her last dying wish was that her parrot be buried with her. But she died at the age of 60. Her parrot was obviously some years younger, but parrots can live to be between 110 and 120. So her parrot was buried alive with her. You see this white stone right here, or you will see if you look on the website. The stone has the name Fred engraved on it, which was the name of her parrot, so he is in there, and yes, he was buried alive, I kid you not. And he has a big stone. He has a bigger stone than a lot of the
kids.
People who are buried here in the cemetery, so.
Well, not a very friendly thing to do to your your beloved pet there. But anyway, make sure that you're here for episode number 9, 10, and 11, because we're finally going to make it to the graves of Wild Bill, Calamity Jane, and Potato Creek Johnny, and you will hear Alex's narration of their lives and the circumstances by which they are now in Mount Moriah Cemetery. Okay, next we're going to have some music. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is a Black Hills artist. His name is Hank Harris. And my wife approached him, my wife Mary, the director of the Adams Museum and House, approached him about doing some research and finding out what was the music that was being played in the very, very early days of Deadwood, from the time of its founding and up until you know, the next 20 or 30 years. So he has gone ahead and found out that music, and they're putting out a CD, they being the Adams Museum and Hank Harris, with Hank playing and singing and some other very talented musicians, another keyboard player and a fiddle player. And it's going to be called A Deadwood Songbook. So the CD will be coming out next month. And this is kind of a sneak preview from the CD. So this is a song called Way Out West. And this was music that was being performed back in the early days of Deadwood. And this is featuring Hank Harris.
It was good to live when all the West, without no fence nor fuss, belonged in partnership with God, the government, and us. The skyline bounds from east to west, with room to go and come. I like my fellow man best when he was scattered some. Sunny, lone, and wide. Let cattle rub my headstone around. Let coyotes well their kin. Let horses come and paw on the ground. But don't you fence it in.
And that was Hank Harris, and we will be having some more music from the CD, A Deadwood Songbook, and some future shows. Next up, we have Joe Hamm, who is the events coordinator for the Deadwood Chamber of Commerce. And we talked to him last week, and this is part two of the interview that I did with him. By the way, there's a picture of Joe Hamm and also of Chuck Turbeville, who we've talked to a couple times on the shows in the past. And again, as I mentioned, it doesn't matter when you hear these episodes of this podcast, whether it's you know, a day after I put this out, or a year after I put this out, or 6 months after I put it out, because the information is entertaining. You know, the performances and the information are as timeless as they can be. But just to tell you, today is actually February 25th, and we just had our Mardi Gras celebration yesterday and today here in Deadwood, one of our yearly celebrations segments that we do. So there's a picture of Chuck Turbeville and Joe Hamm with the Mardi Gras beads hanging around their necks and kind of Mardi Gras costumes that I'll be putting on the website, realdeadwoodpodcast.com, in the photo albums area there. So you can be looking for that. And so you can see what these guys look like. And you've been listening to them for a few episodes. So here we go with part two of my talk with Joe Hamm. Well, you know, I guess part of the reason for having these concerts and stuff is to get people in town and to get them into the casinos. And, of course, as the Chamber of Commerce, you are looked upon by the business community as being a way to promote their business, and their membership in the chamber is supposed to, they're supposed to get something out of it and everything else. Definitely. And so, but it really is kind of does double duty because, yeah, the people who are going to, the gaming people do come to town because they've got the music outside and they go in and they gamble. But, yeah, you have the people that are just the families bringing their kids. They have no intention really of gambling necessarily. They didn't come to town necessarily to go into casino, but they're going to eat.
Right.
They're going to spend money. They're going to buy, you know, souvenirs and what have you. And it still is good for the town, whether the people are coming specifically to gamble or whether they're coming just to see the concert and just getting the name out there. I mean, we always get some sort of national blurb or a couple of articles or something about, you know, what's going on in terms of, you know, promotion and stuff.
Well, and that's the beauty of travel. I mean, we get all these folks that come out here with their families and they get a chance to enjoy. That's the realness of coming out to the Midwest. You get this opportunity to come out and be a part of it. Yeah, we do get the gamblers. We're targeting and getting, you know, a lot of the people that want to gamble and see something that they haven't seen or been a part of for a long time and get to enjoy that. But like you said, you know, the families, the people that live here, that's just the reward for them to be able to
come
out.
Well, yeah, we have a lot of locals that are just, they come to Deadwood for the concerts.
And
they live
it.
In the surrounding towns.
You bet.
And they're here along with the people who have come thousands of miles from Europe to for their vacations and whatever.
Well,
everybody
we know
just gets along great,
and we know how to party. We always party and they party. So
absolutely.
It's just a, you know, it's a comfort zone there.
Yep.
We really enjoy that.
So what are some of the other events that you guys are looking for in terms of, you know, booking talent and stuff?
Well, you know, we do, again, the Wild Bill Days, the Cool Deadwood Nights. There's the Days of 76 that come out there and they do, you know, that's a different committee, but they, you know, they attract a different type of entertainment. You know, we've got some smaller events, our Mardi Gras. We bring out bands from New Orleans that come out of here. That's coming up soon. We do St. Patrick's Day. We've got, you know, we've got the RCH bagpipers from Canada that comes down. And then, of course, the folks from Wyoming, the drum and pipe from Wyoming. So it's really neat. I mean, we're able to kind of mix a whole different group of things together when we do these events. And we bring a lot of people out, and it's just another reason to come out and have fun.
Well, and then you were on the jam board, too. We were both on the Deadwood jam board. Are you still on the board?
That. Yep, still on the board.
And so you've got your influence there in terms of who's hot, who's not. You can sort of advise the gang there in terms of you know, what would be good. And yeah, I mean, you've brought a wealth of expertise to the jam board because you do go to these shows, and you have dealt with the bookers and what have you, and yeah, it's worked out great.
Well, the entertainment business is great, and I can't say how much I've just enjoyed learning more and more about what's going on, but more so I'm more committed to what Deadwood wants and what Deadwood is looking for, and my focus is to get us, you know, at a level to where, you know, we're continuing to just move forward all the time and we're always growing and growing. So I try to anticipate some of the things that that we're headed to, but being a part of, you know, the jam board and being a part of the chamber and this particular job in my events coordinating, it's been amazing. I mean, we've ran across some great people and got some great talent coming to Deadwood. And it just continues to grow. I mean, people really like what's going on and I think we do it together. So it's easy to be a part of that, you know, and I love that.
Let me ask you a little bit then about, you guys, during the winter, things kind of calm down and everything.
Yeah.
And I guess really pretty much it's just Mardi Gras and St. Patty's going on. Did you guys have to do with like New Year's Eve? Do you guys, that's pretty much a Franklin thing.
Yeah,
right?
the New Year's Eve, you know, some of these smaller events start off being, you know, something that an individual casino puts out.
Like Miss Kitty's with Chinese New Year.
Chinese New Year. Franklin had the New Year's Eve.
A lot of the St. Patrick stuff kind of takes place there at the Franklin.
Right. Yeah. So, and then some of these events get bigger, and then, of course, then the folks want to make it a citywide event, and then they bring me in as part of that. But during the wintertime, it gets kind of frustrating in a sense because, you know, we're right here in the middle of the Black Hills. We need snow. You know, snow is a big part of it.
Yep,
you know,
we
had an opportunity to do the WSA, the World Snowmobile Association was going to come out and do some things. And, you know, we had a chance to try to pull that out and make something happen there. But when the weather doesn't cooperate, we have to try to do something different.
Yep.
We do, we have in the past, you know, get into the springtime where, you know, we'll do a Rockin' in the Springs and we do like an old doo-wop group. We had the Drifters, Charlie Thomas and the Drifters.
Chuck Turbeville thought, what are your, before I tell you what he said the numbers were, what were the numbers for Big and Rich? What did you guys come
Well,
up with?
We had about, guesstimation, about 21 to 22,000 people.
Okay, yeah, he was saying 20,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that's just right on the street. That's not.
In a town of 1,400, the population
right.
of 1,400.
Yeah, and if you can, geez, visualize that right on Main Street. It was huge. It was just amazing. Yeah. The alleyways walking through the back of the buildings was the highways. I mean, it was just crowded walking back there. We had people all on the buildings, and that was a big event.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, that was and it was great. You know, you had CMT come down here. You had VH1 down. You had a lot of different entities that came down here that wanted to be a part of that. And so it just was, it was a big bonus for Deadwood. And those are bonus points when we get something like that happening.
And it's bonus points to have good guests like Joe Hamm on the show. Okay, next is our listener feedback segment. And I've read you a couple of emails in the past from some fans of the show. One was from the Netherlands. This time I've got one from France. And this is from a gentleman called Michel in American you would call it Hartinger. Hartinger, H-I-A-R-T-I-N-G-E-R. I can only speculate in French, Artigier or something like that. But anyway, it says, "Bonjour, Paul. Just a few words to tell you how I enjoy your show. Your podcast is definitely a cut above the rest. I think that you must enjoy a lot doing it, but I assume it is also a lot of work and time. I appreciate to know your region or area, the people who live there, and their history better through your podcast, and I thank you for that. And finally, congratulations to your wife, Mary, and of course to you, and just carry on. A special mention to your son, Alex. Parentheses, I have a 16-year-old son, and I am not sure he would be able of such a performance." And then he says, "Best regards, Michel. P.S. Sorry for my broken English." So let's see, here it is. I emailed him back, and I said, "Hi, Michel. Thanks so much for your feedback. It makes all the hard work worthwhile. Where in France are you located? Do you get HBO Deadwood on TV, or do you watch the DVDs? It's fun to find out these facts about my overseas listeners so I can mention them in the shows." So then he emailed me back, and it says, "Actually, bonjour, Paul. Actually, I didn't know the Deadwood TV series before listening to your show." So here we go again. We had someone saying that the last time. "So I can't say I am a real fan, but I could become one through your podcast. On the other hand, I have always been interested in the conquest of the West in general, and in some episodes of it in particular, like the Battle of the Little Bighorn, the Donner Party, Wounded Knee, and others. I have also some interest in other fields of the U.S. history as an amateur, not as a specialist, of course, like the Civil War, for an example. We live in a little town, Saint Jean de Maurienne, so I suppose it's Saint Jean de Maurienne, and 10,000 INH. I imagine that must be the altitude. But it's in the French Alps, halfway between Chambéry in France and Torino in Italy. So he's not that far away from from the Winter Olympics. As a matter of fact, he says, episode 1 of the first season of Deadwood will be aired tonight on Canal Plus. I guess that's like Channel Plus, one of the leading TV channels in France. So here is someone who listens to our podcast, is interested just in the history of the West, then finds out that there is such a thing as the HBO Deadwood show, and then turns around and sees that it's going to be airing in France for the first time, episode 1 of season 1. So and then he says, "Finally, I hope you and your family are all well. Take care, Michel." So thank you so much, Michelle. A special shout out to you in France, to in the French Alps. And it just, as I said in my email to you, it really makes all the work worthwhile to think that I'm here in Deadwood talking into this microphone and putting together these shows, and that people all over the world are listening to it. It's just really fantastic and actually pretty amazing to me. Well, that's it for episode number 8 of the Real Deadwood Podcast. Thanks, as always, so much for being with me. And the music you're hearing is from my CD, Black Hills Gold. And the tune is called Black Hills Fairy Gold. You can buy this one tune or any number of tunes from that CD through iTunes. There's a link for that on the Real Deadwood Podcast website. We've also got a link there to buy the entire CD if you wanted to, or cassette, at pauldennis.com. Now, if you are one of the people similar to Michelle, possibly, who have stumbled across this podcast because of your interest in the town of Deadwood and not necessarily the HBO Deadwood show, and you're interested in getting caught up on the show, or possibly you live in an area somewhere in the world where the show isn't shown and you want to get the DVDs of Season 1, I do have a link for that now on the Real Deadwood Podcast website. And while you're there at the website, make sure you subscribe to the Real Deadwood Podcast if you haven't done so already. That way you'll be automatically notified every time a new episode is available, and you will be able to have some fun with us here with the interviews and the music and the information and news from both Deadwoods. So thanks again for being with me this time. From the Real Deadwood, South Dakota, this is Paul Dennis wishing you all the best.